Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The COVID crisis is taking a mental health toll. 42 million people have lost their jobs, and over 5 million have lost their health insurance. As many states break case and hospitalization records, this crisis could continue for months and months. The United States mental health system was already underfunded, fragmented, and difficult to access before the pandemic. So where are we today? Well, according to the National Alliance on Mental Health, 20% of Americans suffer from a mental health condition, and 10 million adults live with a serious mental illness. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. In 2018, only 43% of U.S. adults with mental illness received treatment. We've done a lot of shows about this issue. We do have resources at our website, yourcallradio.org, and then we have an even longer list on our resource page. If you go to kalw.org, on the right-hand side, there's a resource box. Click on that. There are a number of resources, including crisis text lines, free and low-cost therapy, a therapy specifically for frontline workers, and therapy specifically for communities of color. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 800-273-8255, 800-273-8255. I should also say, now that we know a lot of schools are not going to be open in the fall, there are also resources specifically for parents. Today, we are joined by two guests. Dr. Jonathan Singer is Associate Professor of Social Work at Loyola University Chicago and President of the American Association of Suicidology. Dr. Singer also hosts the Social Work podcast. Hi, Dr. Singer. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and nicely done on trying to get that word suicidology. It's a weird one.
Yeah, lately with COVID, I've been saying some words that I've never used before. But thank you so much. Thank you so much for the great work that you do and the important work you do. We're also joined by Dr. Christine Moutier, Chief Medical Officer at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Dr. Moutier knows the impact of suicide firsthand after losing colleagues. Dr. Moutier joined AFSP in 2013. And is a leader in the field of suicide prevention. She's testified before Congress and has provided multiple congressional briefings on suicide prevention. Hi, Dr. Moutier. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Rose, and thank you so much for having me. And Jonathan, it's great to join you as well.
Great to join you too, Christine.
Well, it's really hard to believe that we are here in July. In some cases, we're right back to where we started. In some cases, it's even worse. And demand was high for mental health services when we started this pandemic. Since then, millions of people have filed for unemployment. A lot of people are now without health insurance. The additional $600 that people are receiving every week is going to expire at the end of the month unless Congress acts. So, Dr. Moutier, let's start with you. What are your general thoughts about where we are?
Well, as you eloquently pointed out, Rose, there have been, you know, a multitude of losses and uncertainty and stressful impacts on people's lives in so many different ways. Everything from the very structure of how we conduct our lives, needing to quarantine, loss of employment, the potential to not be connecting with others as readily. Although I actually have been noticing that many, many people have very instinctively kind of found proactive ways to connect with their loved ones, with coworkers, friends, et cetera. And that's not a small thing, actually. The human connection piece related to how our mental health is going, as well as even on preventing suicide, human connection is incredibly powerful, and the research shows that over and over again. But the other piece that I would point out in all this is the time element, and that in the beginning, It was the case that we sort of gird ourselves and we're like, you know, we're very energized and motivated to kind of figure it out. And I think there's a natural psychological sort of experience that we know about actually from previous disasters. And many of those, of course, were like one moment in time experiences where there is kind of almost a honeymoon phase, it's called, where there's a lot of community cohesion and, again, sort of psychological girding that we do individually. And then over time, our energy wanes and frustration can begin to build and solutions might not be that easy to come by. And so there can be kind of a slippage in these weeks and months that have followed. And I think, you know, that in addition to all of the other things related to what's going on with COVID, the attempt to reopen, now the issue of schools opening or not reopening, and the unemployment issue, all create a level of burden on almost every family's and individual's mental health. And so I'm so grateful for the opportunity to talk about this and to really think about how anyone can be paying attention to this, can be contributing to change for good, and also how there are some policy agenda opportunities specifically around mental health and suicide prevention that are very timely right now.
Yes, thank you. And we will definitely talk about some of the policy changes that you would like to see. Dr. Singer, what would you like to add?
I think that one of the things that's true about this time we're in is that nobody actually knows what's going on. And uncertainty for some people makes them think about what's going to happen in the future. And we call that anxiety, right, or worry. And for some people, it prompts them to think about what's gone wrong in the past, decisions that they've made. And we think about that oftentimes as depression, right? And so I think that in this time of great uncertainty, we have seen over and over again that our elected officials and the people that are supposed to be in charge are failing us in terms of providing guidance. And so it's creating an incredibly anxious situation. And on top of that, you have the systems that Christine was talking about that are stressed and strained in a way that they've never been taxed before. And lots of folks have risen to the occasion, but we have some serious gaps in the way we conceptualize services, the way we conceptualize mental well-being that have been laid bare by this pandemic.
To your point, in 2018, only 43% of U.S. adults with a mental illness received treatment.
Yes. And I mean, you know, and receiving treatment means a whole bunch of things. If we think about folks receiving psychotherapy and really being able to have the luxury of diving in and dealing with some of the issues that are pretty deep-seated, it's way less than that. And I'll say that our crisis services have been a phenomenal resource to traditional therapists, mental health providers. I mean, at the end of the day, when a mental health provider goes home, what do? They give the number for the local crisis line. And then the crisis line takes care of all sorts of things that the mental health provider can't take care of. And so, you know, these services have shown over and over and over again that short, brief, intense services can be very effective at reducing crises and increasingly for addressing long-term needs. But we have a mental health service delivery system that's stuck in 1890, where there's an hourly appointment once a week, maybe twice a week, and you go talk about things, and then that's supposed to fix things over the long term. And I think that this crisis has shown us how problematic that model is.
Right. And in the case of Kaiser, for example, we've had some of their therapists on the show who say that in some cases it could take weeks or even months to get follow-up appointments. And, you know, even having, in case, if you're in a deep crisis, one appointment a week might not be enough. You know, rather than dive in and talk more about the problems, which we will do in the during the show, let's really flip it around and just talk about the resources that are available now, because we know that the system is incredibly difficult to navigate. I've been helping a loved one deal with a mental health issue in the last 2 years, and I've just been blown away by how hard the system is to navigate. So let's talk about what is available. We've been finding some amazing resources here in the Bay Area, Dr. Moutier. A couple that I'd like to talk about. The Frontline Workers Counseling Project is a group of incredible therapists in the Bay Area. They are offering free counseling to frontline workers, and you can get same day or next day appointments. That website is fwcp.org. And again, we will have all of these on our website. There's also crisis text lines if you'd rather text than talk to someone. And then, like I said, there is that parent line, which I am going to find. I'll find that in just a minute. But what other resources would you like to put out there for people who might need help right now, Dr. Moutier?
Definitely. Yeah, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about that, because mental health is very layered. And so if people don't remember anything else, remember this, that regardless of where you are and what you're experiencing right now in your mental health, number one, you're not alone. This is a shared experience that is across our human experience right now. And one piece of good news is that the culture is changing so much, just like you all are promoting here right now, that there is simply no stigma. These are health issues, and these are human experiences. So, but the other thing is that you can reach out to resources like the Crisis Text Line and the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, even if you're not in what you consider to be a really acute crisis. And these are national resources, the Crisis Text Line, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, that are available 24/7 for every single community across the United States. And that is something of what makes them unique. But I am so glad to also learn about the Bay Area local resources, especially that Frontline Workers Counseling Project. That is just awesome. There are a number of frontline worker and healthcare provider resources that are new, that have popped up and developed because of COVID. One, for example, specifically for physicians who are on the front line, that is a volunteer staffing by psychiatrists to speak to colleagues. Again, these are physicians who are mostly not in a suicidal crisis, but are having trouble managing their resilience and staying kind of balanced, and it may be that they have had issues to deal with related to depression, anxiety, PTSD, addiction over years, but they had never actually reached out. And during COVID, one of the potential silver linings is that this topic of mental health is so prevalent now that I think it has normalized the idea of reaching out, because it's almost like, who doesn't need a little extra support and an ear to talk to right now? So that group is called the Physician Support Network, or Physician Support Line, and that is also a national resource. There are other ones as well, like the Trevor Project for LGBTQ youth in particular, but really anyone can access their hotline, as well as the trans hotline. Those are some of our top kind of national resources. And again, you know, it's the type of thing that you can call or text these resources, even if you feel like, gosh, someone else might need it more. But the truth is, we're all at different places in our journey, and that reach out can be enormously helpful to, in a way, like helping yourself to to come to some new understanding about what is going on and what you can do about it from there. So sometimes it's like stimulates the next step in each of our mental health journeys.
Yes, and thank you for those resources. The Trevor Project line for LGBTQ youth and people who need some mental health resources and help, that number is 866-488-7386, 866-488-7386, and the Trans Lifeline is 877-565-8860, 877-565-8860. And these are just so important because in addition to COVID, a lot of people are dealing with mental health around racism, around all of the police violence and the videos that we see just by going on social media. They seem to be popping up almost daily, and that really does cause a lot of stress and trauma. I also want to give the number for Safe and Sound. They run a 24-hour line for parents. We know that so many parents and caregivers are really stressed out right now, especially knowing that school probably is not going to open in the fall. And that number is 415-441-5437. And again, we will put all of these resources on our website. What would you like to add, Dr. Singer? What would you like to say to people who are experiencing stress or trauma right now? And what resources would you like to share?
Christina's right on about the sort of these national resources. And I think they're really good to reach out to if you are in crisis or you are experiencing something that might lead to a crisis. It's also something that you can reach out to if you are supporting someone who is struggling. So let's say you're talking with somebody who says, yeah, I just don't think that, you know, people would care if I lived or I died. And you're like, okay, a little freaked out right now. I'm not sure what to do. But I do remember listening to that radio show, and they say call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. So maybe the person that you're talking to doesn't want to call, but you can call. And you can say, hey, so I'm talking with somebody that is just said that they are thinking about killing themselves. Can you talk me through this? Can you help me? And they will. And so this is a resource for helpers. There's another resource for helpers that was created by the Pandemic Crisis Services Response Coalition, and the URL is covidmentalhealthsupport.org, and that is a place where crisis service responders can go to get help for themselves, or where a loved one can go if they're worried about their loved one who is a crisis responder. And so that's a really good resource. Another resource that I would share is there's Teen Line, and then I think it's called Youth Line or Lines for Youth. And these are crisis lines that are staffed by youth for youth. And so it's a phenomenal resource, and it's a great model for saying – if you're anxious, maybe your parent lost their job, maybe you're feeling sad and isolated because you can't see your friends and blah, 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 and you want to talk to some other kids, you can call these text or call these youth lines, and you will be connected to youth who are trained in crisis response. And it's a phenomenal resource.
Wow, that sounds amazing. I'm just on the website right now. We'll have to invite some of these young people on the show. The teen line is, let's see, you text the word teen, T-E-E-N, to 839-863, and they're available every night from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific time. You can find it online, teenlineonline.org. Thank you. These are really important and incredible resources. Dr. Jonathan Singer is Associate Professor of Social Work at Loyola University Chicago. Dr. Christine Moutier is Chief Medical Officer at the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention. And today we are talking about the mental health toll caused by the COVID pandemic. What resources are available? If you have any questions or comments, if you'd like to share a story or just really talk about how you're doing, give us a call at 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. And if you would like to share a few resources, we would love to hear from you. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. You can also tweet us at yourcallradio. Let's talk a little bit about teletherapy. Luckily, the rules have changed under COVID, which makes it easier for people to receive teletherapy. And, you know, based on my experience, Medicare doesn't pay for that. There are so many restrictions around therapy with Medicare. I'm not sure what it's like for other insurance, but if anyone would like to call in and talk about that, that would be another issue we'd like to discuss. Dr. Moutier, can you talk about the changes that we're seeing and the rise in teletherapy? And basically what this is instead of going into the office, you speak with a therapist on your computer.
Yes, thank you so much for spotlighting this, because if you are someone who has thought about going to therapy, but either the cost or just making the time, we all have these, you know, barriers that keep us from being ready to do it. But now being able to access a trained mental health professional online through a virtual visit that could either be by phone or through video chat is so much more widely available, interestingly, because of COVID. And, of course, what happened was Congress had to go into quick sort of emergency level speed work to pull back the previously and in my opinion, inappropriately restrictive rules and requirements around telehealth services. And of course, they had to do that because of the virus itself and needing to keep social distancing in order for people to get medical help. But the beautiful sort of bleed over effect or trickle down effect into the mental health arena is that all of those changes in the legislation around telehealth services also applied to telepsychiatry and telemental health, teletherapy. And so one of the things that our policy team at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention and many other great groups are fighting very hard right now to make sure that those temporary legislative changes that were made effectively and appropriately around COVID don't simply revert back after the whatever is perceived as the immediate threat of COVID is over. Because the truth is, we should have made those changes long ago. We've had problems with access to care, fragmented health systems that were not necessarily built with, you know, to be really cynical, with patients in mind, let alone with mental health needs in mind, and also then the issue of people of color and with cultural competency and the need to build that in mind either. And so this is a real opportunity where advances have been made that we should not just pull back on those. You know, in terms of how to operationalize that for yourself, if you do have health insurance, there is a very good chance that your health insurance plan now has a way for you to have not only telemedicine visits available to you, but to include telemental health. And so I actually would start on your insurance page or by calling your insurance provider. And if you do not have health insurance, there is a very good chance that through your local mental health county resources that teleservices are being offered in that way. And that would be more of a local thing to figure out how to access those.
Right. And then a lot of therapists also have sliding scale, especially if you're not working right now. And then there are some free services. You just have to take the time to really find this, but it is out there. The online therapy company Talkspace reported a 65% jump in clients since mid-February. Text messages and transcribed therapy sessions collected anonymously by the company showed COVID-related anxiety dominating patients' concerns. We're going to take a quick break. On today's Your Call, we are talking about the mental health toll that is being caused and really exacerbated by COVID. We're joined by Dr. Christine Moutier, Chief Medical Officer at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and Dr. Jonathan Singer, Associate Professor of Social Work at Loyola University Chicago. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will discuss the tragic killing of Vanessa Guillen, a 20-year-old soldier who disappeared from the Fort Hood military base in Texas on April 22nd. Her remains were found in late June, the Army said. The suspect who killed her died by suicide on July 1st. A number of survivors are sharing their stories online, so I hope you can join us for that tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email us yourcall@kalw.org. If you'd like to join today's conversation about mental health and COVID, if you have any stories to share, if you'd like to just talk about how you're doing, or if you need any resources, if you know of any resources, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Dr. Jonathan Singer is Associate Professor of Social Work at Loyola University Chicago and President of the American Association of Suicidology. Dr. Singer also hosts the Social Work podcast. Dr. Christine Moutier is Chief Medical Officer at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and she knows the impact of suicide firsthand after losing colleagues. Well, let's take our first caller. Let's go to Ariane in San Francisco. Hi, Ariane. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a layered comment here. I'm a clinical psychologist, and I just want to underscore the fact that when people are working with severely mentally ill, like, say, someone who has bipolar disorder, they may or may not be functional, that psychologists psychically give their energy to the client when they meet him or her in their office, and that's a way of keeping people alive. When they're extremely depressed or suicidal. The second comment, though, I want to make is in relationship to that, and I'm hoping that there will always be in-office meetings with clients, because with the telecom era, there is a tendency to go towards digitized and limited services for people. But that being said, people who have Medicare, whom I work with as well, they can be elderly people who've worked their entire lives, and they have a host of physical problems. So beyond the COVID crisis, they can't come into the office because, for instance, I have a client who lives three blocks away from my office, and she has severe Parkinson's and arthritis, and as a result, anxiety. And I have a temporary permission to treat her over the phone. But that's not going to change. If she loses her services when the quarantine ends, she's really going to be extremely vulnerable to intense symptoms. Right. And we have to think about our elders, how they're a discrete category that need help and deserve help, and Medicare has to extend these.
Yeah, thank you, Ariane. I completely agree and understand what you're saying, because the person I'm helping is on Medicare and does not like to leave the house. So teletherapy really, we won't get into it, but teletherapy works for some people. And then in-person treatment face-to-face is better for others. But at least people can have a choice, Dr. Moutier. Can you talk about that? And also Ariane's comments just about the importance of really focusing on elders.
Oh, yes. I mean, her points were spot on. And, you know, her starting with her comment about how when we as clinicians are working with somebody who is struggling at any level, and whether, you know, whether they are living with bipolar disorder or a different mental health condition, or they are struggling with suicidal thoughts that can stem from, you know, multiple places in their life, including of course the deterioration in their mental health, that interaction between clinician and person is so kind of special and important. That clinician is there solely for that person's benefit and mental health. They have no other vested interest other than the well-being of that person. And of course, they're trained in psychology or psychiatry or social work, and you know, the intricacies of how to help people get through their unique and their individual issues. So, I loved that comment about the energy shared and how that can help really motivate or sustain individuals. And this I want to just make it clear too that we professionals also should be taking care of our own mental health and receiving our own therapy so that we as human beings are optimizing our own resilience. All of that actually affects all aspects of our life. So I really do see mental health as for all of us. If we're in the human race, then we should be taking care of our mental health. And right, I mean, I think the point was made beautifully that for some, the telehealth access to therapy is going to be the way that they can get treatment for a variety of reasons. But for others, it will still absolutely be important to have in-person treatment available. And it depends on, of course, the modality of what kind of mental health treatment you're participating in as well. You know, there are some forms of therapy that are much or even necessary to do in person, and others that are very amenable to doing via telehealth or virtual visits like cognitive behavioral therapy. Whereas maybe some others like EMDR, eye movement desensitization treatment, that those might be easier at least to do in person because of the physical nature of that bilateral experience during EMDR, which is a very effective treatment, by the way, for trauma. And then as for our older adults and colleagues, loved ones, that is a group of individuals that we all, whether we're a clinician or not, can be thinking about in, right now during COVID, because they may be especially vulnerable, not just from a medical standpoint to the virus, but because of other things that set them up in life to be more socially isolated. And they need human contact, love, support, checking in on, you know, just like mundane things like a visit, a social visit, the ability to kind of come together and play a game with neighbors or colleagues, very much right now. So I would just, you know, I wrote a blog about this because there are so, you know, all, every group of people is important and has some sort of differentiating needs. But older adults right now are ones that any one of us can be thinking about. Who are they in our life and reaching out in our neighborhood, you know, offering little things like to walk their dog, to come by, to grab something from the grocery store. Those are really kind of simple but very practical and powerful ways to make sure that that person not only is getting their physical needs met, but that they are being thought of, that they're cared for. And again, that's a powerful and important thing for all of us to be able to feel that way.
Dr. Singer, what would you add?
I mean, Christine said so much. It's, you know, there's, she's sort of touched on kind of the major points. I think, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about with Ariane and what she was talking about with her client is that, you know, we have a mental health system that's set up, and she mentioned that she had a client that was three blocks away. You know, we have this system set up to reimburse so that, sometimes people can't get reimbursed to do home visits, right? They can't travel the three blocks. Therapists have to set up their schedules so that they're seeing people every hour because reimbursement rates are so low. And in fact, there's a disparity in reimbursement rates. You have clinical social workers who provide the vast majority of clinical mental health services in the country that the American Psychiatric Association, American Psychological Association fought to make sure that social workers were reimbursed at a lower rate than psychologists and psychiatrists for doing the exact same service. And what this means is that we have this disparity. So you've mentioned a couple of free mental health services, and I, you know, props to my colleagues who are giving out free services. But I think this is one of these areas where, you know, if we're bailing out banks, we need to bail out the therapists. We need to make sure that there is funding so that therapists who really are barely making it financially don't have to give free services, and then nobody expects therapists to give free services for providing an essential service. And so I would just like to throw that out there, that this is an important piece to all of this.
Thank you so much for that. It just makes sense. A number of counselors have told me I would love to take Medicare, but I can't live on the fee that they pay. So this really needs to be part of the conversation around healthcare for all, is where does mental health fit in for that? Thank you so much, Ariane. And just talking about elders, we have an email from Steve who says, what other services do your guests know that offer this type of help for seniors? He's talking about short-term brief phone encounters. He volunteered as a teen in Detroit with a group called Open City, and they provided many services like this. Well, there are quite a few. I'm sure that I'm going to give some for California, but I'm sure these services are also, I'm hoping, are in place in other states. The Institute on Aging offers a 24-hour friendship line for people 60 and older, people with disabilities, and anyone who feels isolated. 800-971-0016. 800-971-0016. The Institute on Aging, I think that's probably your best bet. There's also the Peer Run Warm Line, and they offer 24-hour emotional support. That number is 855-845-7415. 855-845-7415. You can also chat. It's mentalhealthsf.org. And I just want to repeat these lines because I know that not everyone listening uses a computer. So it's also important to remember those people. Thank you for calling in, Ariane. Let's go to our next caller, MJ in Oakland. Hi, MJ.
Oh, hi. I'm calling because I'm 70 years old. I'm gay, and although I live in an affordable housing place, my rent is still almost $900 a month, and my Social Security is $1,068 a month. Mm. So that leaves me about $160 left over. I do have some food stamps. I have a number of physical problems that are making it necessary for me to quit working. I worked up until last September. I was a caregiver for people with Alzheimer's and dementia. But I can't do that anymore. And the eviction moratorium for COVID is actually working in my favor because I can be assured that I'm not going to be evicted. But I think I'm under another program which lasts until March because of my age and disabilities. I have not been able to make my full rent for the past 2 months. I've decided to pay one-third of the amount because that's what, if Reagan had not discontinued the funding from the government when he went into office in the 80s, I think I would have a pretty reasonable situation to live in. There are 50,000 people waiting for Section 8. I would love to get a Section 8. I've applied for 10 years. I haven't been chosen. It's a lottery system. I can go on and on, but if anybody has anything to respond with, I'd appreciate it.
And MJ, if you can hang on the line, we'd like to get your phone number because we want to do a show about people living on Social Security and the need to increase Social Security. Dr. Moutier, any response to MJ? I mean, so many people are in MJ's position.
Yes, absolutely. And MJ, thank you so much for calling and for sharing that. You sound incredible and strong and resilient, despite a lot of things being kind of stacked against you, and having to stop working recently as well. Sounds like another, you know, challenge, not just financially, but maybe to other aspects. And I guess when you were talking, MJ, I just had a gut instinct that if we had longer to talk and for you to tell your story, that we would learn a lot more about how you have managed to keep your mental health as robust as you must be doing. We probably don't have time to get into all of that, but it's just, to me, you're somebody who I think we could learn more from. And that is also this incredible example of how actually managing our mental health when things are really, really tough financially, and in a multitude of other ways in our lives, that actually that managing our mental health is not the exception. It's the rule that people are incredibly resourceful and resilient. And I think our being able to dialogue more about that as a society, like to learn from each other about how that worked, because I'm just a big believer in we all have our mental health, but it works kind of differently for each individual based on a whole host of factors, you know, our internal biological, genetic, early upbringing, influence modeling, psychological traits, cognitive traits. It's like a whole lot that is there. And the more we can sort of become an expert about how that works for us, the more we can actually set our lives up that we're keeping our mental health on balance. And again, I think many, many people just do that very instinctively. But there's always room for all of us to kind of optimize that a bit.
And it also speaks to the great need for major policy changes, Dr. Moutier. I mean, absolutely. Someone like MJ, who dedicated her life to helping others and now only has $150 left a month in one of the wealthiest states in the country, just shouldn't be happening.
Absolutely.
Well, MJ, I hope we got your number, and we'd love to have you on a show about Social Security. Thank you so much for calling in. Dr. Christine,
I would love to participate in any way I can.
Okay, thank you so much, MJ, for sharing your story, and thank you for calling in. Today we are talking about COVID and mental health. Dr. Christine Moutier is Chief Medical Officer at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Dr. Jonathan Singer is Associate Professor of Social Work at Loyola University, Chicago. So we talked about elders. I also would like to spend some time talking about millennials, because millennials are really facing a mental health crisis. The Atlantic had a story, and I'll just read from the top. Suicides and overdoses among young adults were already skyrocketing before the pandemic started. Now experts fear that situation is going to get even worse. I mean, millennials are dealing with a lot of student debt, and right now, a horrible, horrible job market. So Dr. Singer, can you talk a bit about millennials and what resources are available for them?
So one of the things about, if we think about suicide risk in different age groups, you know, suicide is the second leading cause of death for folks 15 to 34. And there is this paradox that you have millennials who in some ways are more connected to peers and resources and job prospects than folks like MJ, for whom society has traditionally booted out of the social care system. So what we see is we really see the need for expanding and addressing suicide prevention in the workplace, as well as mental health services that are related to the workplace. Now, I want to be clear. I am not suggesting that our current model for insurance, which is based primarily on employment, is the way to go. I think it's one of the problems. But I do think that making sure that people are not penalized when they are saying to their employer, I can be an amazing employee. I love my job. I love what I can do. I can do amazing things. But I also have to have time to take care of the things that are not going well with me. It's an idea that I call healthy sick, which is that in the United States, you can either be healthy or you can be sick, and you can't be both. And, you know, Christine and I talk with folks all the time who are amazing people who also struggle with thoughts of suicide. They struggle with the stigma and the discrimination associated with having been suicidal. And if we lived in a society where somebody could say, yeah, I'm 35 and I have a lot to give and I also need to be able to take care of myself, then I think that person and society would be better off. But we're not that society, and that's one of the societal issues that needs to change. And I'll just say, since I have the floor at the moment, that I think one of the things that we do not do is we do not hold the state or the system accountable enough for what's going on. There is no reason why MJ should be concerned about housing. It's ridiculous. As you said, one of the wealthiest states in the country, one of the wealthiest countries in the world. This should never happen. And yet it does. And if you want to look to see who we care about, look to see who's getting discarded, and it'll give you a clue as to what our priorities are.
Exactly. And I mean, it's to the point of being so obscene, Dr. Moutier, beyond obscene. I was just looking at billionaire wealth the other day. Stock prices are at all-time highs. And yet someone like MJ has to worry about, you know, where her next meal or, you know, just getting by. I mean, it's just obscene, which adds to the mental health crisis.
It does. And I was having a similar thought the other day, you know, thinking about how America used to be a country where we were differentiated from other societies, where that differential between the ultra wealthy and then sort of the masses, who you know, in some countries like India and other places where that gap is just, you know, is just extremely wide. You know, it's awful to think about that we have actually seemed to move more in that direction, which, you know, we're talking about that because there is a relationship between educational opportunity, employment opportunity, and the sense of identity we get from our work, and financial resources and our mental health. They are very much factors. They are not the only factors, though. So I do want to just say that it can really start to feel overwhelming and like completely that we're in a state of hopelessness or doom when we look at things like economic trends. And again, there is a relationship absolutely between those issues and mental health, but our mental health draws from much more than that. And so it still does not leave each individual powerless in terms of what each of us can be doing for our own mental health as well as for the people in our lives.
Right. Final thoughts from both of you. Unfortunately, COVID is going to be with us for months and months. We just do not have a handle on this yet. Again, I just want to say, because I know a lot of people are really concerned about their unemployment benefits. According to reports, the White House is going to work with Democrats on some kind of extension. We don't know what that will be, but we will be on top of it. There's so many changes that need to be made, Dr. Singer. And Dr. Moutier, you're so right about stress around COVID, stress around, you know, racism and these videos, and then just stress around what's really happening in this country. Dr. Singer, what are some of the major policy changes you would like to see?
Well, I totally agree with Christine that we need to make sure that telemental health, including telephonic services, right, therapy over the telephone, not just using a computer, that those are codified and they're written into law, and that we can't have insurance companies perpetuate a discrimination between physical health care and mental health care over telemental health or telehealth. Another one of the policy changes that I think is essential is that we need to make sure that people's basic needs, their housing, as MJ was alluding to, that nobody is at risk or fearing of losing their housing during the pandemic. I mean, ideally, nobody would ever lose housing, but the sort of the prohibition against evictions and foreclosures, that should just be extended. And if people who are the owners of the houses are concerned about paying their own mortgages, the government needs to step in there. I think that addressing the resources for remote therapy, as well as addressing basic needs like housing stability, are going to be incredibly important in addressing mental health as we move through this prolonged pandemic period.
Dr. Moutier, what would you add? We have just under a minute.
Sure. All excellent points Jonathan is making, and I would just add that another major policy and point of appropriation and funding is necessary for our crisis services system across the country, not just at the national level, but for there to be mobile crisis services so that law enforcement is not the only alternative when one is in a mental health emergency. That's a huge thing that we need to build at the state and more local levels. And then the last thing I would add is now is the time to fund research and programs related to mental health and suicide prevention that also must take into account the cultural sensitivity and competency to be built into those, because that has been an absent feature. But this is really the time. We know about the COVID, sort of public health implications, and we've focused on the physical health, but the mental health sort of epidemic that is coming that we are in related to COVID, we have to build that as well. That is part of America's kind of next steps for our to benefit the American people and really for our sustenance and survival.
Dr. Christine Moutier and Dr. Jonathan Singer, thank you so much for all of your work, and thank you for joining us. We would love to have you back. We're going to do a week-long series on these issues.
Would love to be back.
That's fantastic.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Take care, Rose.
You too. Thank you so much. And I just want to mention a couple more resources here. Actor Taraji Henson recently launched free online therapy for African Americans through the Boris Lawrence Henson Foundation. And we will put a link on our website, yourcallradio.org. We will definitely do a show about therapy for communities of color. And one more announcement. This is really important. Currently, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 800-273-8255. A proposal from the FCC would make it just three digits. It would make it 988, and that would instantly connect people with trained counselors. The FCC is going to vote on this tomorrow, so now is the time to make your voice heard. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.